Can I ask you a rather serious question? And the question is this: how tolerant are you, or how tolerant are we to sin? How tolerant? I'm going to give you a list. Brace yourself for this list. It's a list of sins. The Bible has many sins listed for us so we can know what sin actually is by name. How tolerant are we of these things? Abuse, adultery, anger, arrogance. How about coveting and cursing? Add to that deceit, disobedience, drunkenness, enmity, envy, evil thoughts, gossip and greed, hatred, jealousy, lies, murder, pride. Add to that sensuality, sexual immorality, slander, swearing, stealing, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, I can go on and on with a list of possible sins. How tolerant are we? The reality is that we live in a world where sin is so much part of daily life, so in our culture and in our society. We are confronted with sin in one way or another all the time. I don't need to tell you that. You know that. The question is, how do we think about sin? When we think about sin, is it the world that has a bigger impact on us, or God Himself? Are we standing or going by God's standard on what is right and wrong and good and evil, or do we go with the world's thinking? So, do you think we should welcome sin in our lives? That we should host it in our homes? That we should excuse it in our minds? And that we should entertain it in our hearts? Or should it grieve us? Should we stand against it? Should we fight sin? Should we do all we can to avoid it? How should we relate to sin? What do you say? Children, what do you say? What should we do with sin? Last time, in Leviticus chapter 11, we saw that God is pure, He is holy, He is free from any stain, separate from defilement. He is untainted by sin and evil. And He calls us to be holy as He is holy. That's what God says in Leviticus chapter 11, verse 44. I am the Lord your God, He says to His people Israel. Consecrate yourself, therefore, and be holy, for I am holy. How does God feel about sin? Listen to the following Bible verses. Psalm 45, verses 6 and 7. Your throne, O God, is forever and ever. The scepter of your kingdom is a scepter of uprightness. And then listen to this. You have loved righteousness and hated wickedness. That is our God. Proverbs 6, verse 16 to 19. There are six things, no, seven, we are told, that God hates. Haughty eyes, lying tongue, hands that are swift to shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans. Feet that are swift to run to evil. False witnesses that breathes out lies. And one who sows discord among brothers. Add to that, Psalm 5, verses 4 and 5. Are you not a God, the psalmist says, who delights not in wickedness? Evil may not dwell with you. The boastful may not stand in your presence. You hate all evildoers. So God hates wickedness. And the Bible tells us that sin is wickedness. It is lawlessness. And God's eyes are too pure to look upon sin. Sin is an outrage to God. He does not dwell with it. Now, to help us to appreciate just how displeasing sin is to God and how unwelcome it is in His presence, we are given Leviticus chapter 13. More than that, in Leviticus chapter 14, God shows us what needs to happen before He will accept a sinner into His presence. In Leviticus chapter 13 and 14, we are given regulations regarding leprosy. But these two chapters illustrate for us the reality of sin, and it drives home the message that sin is a defilement and cleansing is required for it. It is a symbol of sin, leprosy. It is not sin itself, but it is a vivid illustration of how God treats sin and how we should be thinking about sin as well. So, firstly, notice uncleanness from leprosy from Leviticus chapter 13. Now, leprosy, as you may know, is a dreaded skin disease. It's infectious, and it is characterized by sores, scabs, and spots on the skin, and it can spread very quickly on the skin. We read about that in Leviticus chapter 13, verses 2 to 46. But you may find it interesting to know that leprosy could also be a scaling and a disfiguring condition that occurs on fabrics and on leather and even occur on the walls of buildings and houses. We read about that in Leviticus chapter 13, verse 47 to 59, and also Leviticus chapter 14, verses 33 to 53. By the way, when the Bible speaks about leprosy, it covers a wider range of conditions that would typically today be defined medically as leprosy. So our focus today is going to be on leprosy as a skin disease. Left untreated, leprosy caused permanent nerve and skin damage, deformity of the hands and the feet and the face. Skin diseases were not left at the time to individuals to diagnose for themselves, but they had to go to the priests. God had appointed the priests at the time to decide on times of quarantine for people who had leprous diseases and decided on whether the sufferer of such conditions were to be pronounced clean or unclean. So while leprosy is obviously a health and a safety concern, the laws behind Leviticus chapter 13 and 14 primarily focuses on it as a religious concern. We are given a concluding statement at the end of chapter 14 in verses 54 to 57 that reads as follows. This is the law of any case of leprous disease. For an itch for leprous disease in a garment or in a house, for the swelling or an eruption or a spot, to show what is unclean and what is clean. This is the law of the leprous disease. So Leviticus chapter 14 and verse 57 is telling us that the purpose for these chapters were to teach us what is clean and unclean when it came to skin diseases and leprous diseases. So in Leviticus chapter 13, we are presented with seven skin conditions, including detailed descriptions of their symptoms so that an accurate pronouncement could be made whether it was clean or unclean. And so what a priest could typically do by looking at a skin disease was firstly to decide whether it was leprous, and if it was leprous, then it was pronounced to be unclean. If it was not leprous at first sight, then the priest would typically isolate the person for a period of time until they were able at a later time to either pronounce the person clean or unclean. So seven skin diseases are given to us in chapter 13. Firstly, skin eruptions, and then also chronic skin conditions. Skin trouble with boils. Skin trouble resulting from burns. Skin trouble in the scalp or the beard. Harmless rashes. And skin trouble with baldness. Now there's a fair amount of repetition. I don't know if you've ever read through these chapters. 59 verses and a lot of repetition. So let us just look at one typical example of a skin disease that was leprous. And that is found in verses chapter 13, verses 2 to 8. Leprosy due to skin eruptions. So in the case of pimples, we are told, rashes or spots, many of them would be minor and short-lived. But in order to be sure, the person who had them had to go to the priest before the all is clear could be given. If the person suspected that they had a leprous attack, then the priest would typically go through two basic tests. The first was whether the area turned white around the hair on the skin. And the second was the area or the infection deeper than the skin? If so, the person was pronounced to be unclean. If there were no symptoms, the person was isolated and then re-examined 7 days later to see whether the symptoms had progressed. And if there was no spread, then the person was pronounced to be clean. And so, if there was spread 14 days later, then the person would be pronounced unclean because it was a leprous disease. Now, what happened when a person was found to be leprous? We read about that in chapter 13, verse 45 and 46. Notice what was required. The leprous person who has the disease shall wear torn clothes and let the hair of their head hang loose, and he shall cover his upper lip and cry out, unclean, unclean. And he shall remain unclean as long as he has the disease. He is unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. Now let's just think about that for a moment. Lepers were required to tear their clothes, untidy their hair, and cover their mouths and cry out, unclean, unclean. What a shameful thing. But more than that, a leper was to remain as long as they were unclean. They were to live outside the camp. They had to leave the Israelite camp and go to the outside. And that was where they were to live as long as they had leprosy. What a public display that emphasized an unclean state. Just imagine what it must have been like for somebody who had leprosy. When people mourned for the dead, they tore their clothes and their hair became messy. That is what was expected of a person who became leprous. For example, when Jacob thought that his son Joseph was dead, he had died, he'd been killed, that's what he did. He tore his clothes and he let his hair hang loose. And because of this state of uncleanness, the leprous person was excluded from the tabernacle and from the community of God's people. He or she was banished to a lonely existence, far away from the presence of God, who made his earthly home in the tabernacle. Leprosy was described as a living death. The mental state of people in Israel who were leprous could possibly be compared to somebody today in some way who has found a growth in their body, or a growth has been detected. Firstly, just imagine how unbearable the waiting period is to find out from the doctor whether one's health is okay, and how devastating it is when one receives from the doctor the serious news of something that's seriously wrong. It must have been very hard on a leper and on a leper's family and their loved ones to have been, in addition to that, shunned out of the community, prevented from coming into the presence of God. In their case, they were literally treated like outcasts. Quite disturbing, wouldn't you say? What are these things teaching us? First, in Leviticus chapter 11 through to 16, which is the broader section, we are taught about purification laws, which teaches us that holiness is associated with wholeness of life. Any visible signs of degeneration or abnormality is incompatible with God, who is holy and most wholesome. For example, in Leviticus chapter 11, we saw that unclean food and dead bodies and dead carcasses are inconsistent with God, who is the author of life. And the same can be said for the disease of leprosy. It is a vivid picture of what God is not. Physical indications of impurity are ultimately a result of the cause of sin when Adam and Eve disobeyed God in the Garden of Eden. And only what is pure and wholesome can come into the presence of God, and Adam and Eve therefore were shut out of the Garden of Eden. And we see the same picture when it comes to leprosy. Nothing impure and unholy and that is decaying can come into the presence of God. That takes us back to the problem of sin. Our text is a picture of how sin is cutting us off from the presence of God. Sin, in all its forms, is not just displeasing to God, but he also doesn't dwell with sin. It is unwelcome in his presence. The psalmist confirms this, where he says in Psalm 24, verses 3 and 4, "Who shall ascend to the holy hill of the Lord? And who shall stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, and who does not lift up his heart to an idol or swears deceitfully." Another reason why we are told these things is it was to preserve the holiness of the tabernacle that lay at the center of the Israelite camp, where God, who is holy, said he would be present visibly and tangibly among his people. And so it was necessary to remove from the camp all those individuals and articles that were obviously, physically, and also spiritually unwholesome. They spoiled the wholesomeness of the camp. That brings us again to sin. Sin doesn't not only belong in the presence of God, neither is it welcome among God's people. God has set his people apart to live for him and to live sanctified lives. So Leviticus chapter 13 deals with matters of uncleanness due to leprosy. But is there any hope for a leper? Well, that brings us to Leviticus chapter 14. Because in chapter 14, we are told about cleansing from leprosy. Now, leprosy referred to in the Bible were not considered matters that were incurable. They weren't diseases that were incurable. Of course, we know of examples where God miraculously cured lepers. For example, Miriam, the sister of Moses who had leprosy, and Naaman, the Syrian who had leprosy, God miraculously cured them. But there would have been cases as well of people who were unclean because of leprosy, and they became clean through natural healing processes. And so this chapter is not about how we become clean, but rather pronouncements of being clean. Now, can you imagine a person, how a person must feel who was leprous and that they found that their skin no longer showed signs of leprosy, and that they could now reapply to be allowed back into the Israelite camp, to be with their families, and to be able to worship God. Can you remember what it was like when all the COVID restrictions got lifted and we were free again to move wherever we wanted to, and even together as a church to worship God? But there was no quick way and an easy way for a leper to be admitted back into the community. The priest, again, was responsible for the outcast person to inspect the person and to ensure that they were properly clean before they could come into the presence of God. As the previous chapter indicated, the leprous person was considered to be in a state of living death. Death and death-like situations, therefore, had to be treated with caution and with particular detail in order to ensure that what was unclean could become clean. So we are told about two ceremonies that had to take place. Firstly, a ceremony outside the camp in chapter 14, verses 2 to 8. So the priest examined the individual outside the camp, and when the priest was satisfied that the leper had been healed, then there were two procedures. Firstly, two clean birds were taken, brought, the one bird was killed, and the other one was set free. The blood of the dead bird was mixed with water, and a clay pot, poured into a clay pot, and hyssop was used, and the blood was sprinkled on the person who had been leprous, and it was, and the other live bird, the live bird was dipped into the blood and water and allowed to go free as a pronouncement of the person who had been leprous that that person is now clean. But secondly, the person who had been healed was expected to wash themselves and their clothes and to shave themselves. And for the remainder of the week, the individual could come into the camp in a transitional state, but they were not allowed to move into their tents with their families. And that brings us to the ceremony inside the camp, verses 9 to 20. This final part of the acceptance ritual included washing, sacrifice, and also the use of oil and blood. Firstly, on the seventh day, the person again had to shave themselves completely, including the head, the beard, and even the eyebrows, and wash their body and their clothes. Children, now can you imagine what I would look like if I had shaved off all my hair and my eyebrows? Well, maybe you shouldn't imagine that. But anyway, people who were shaved in this way, as you can imagine, would have been noticed a mile away. Everybody would see them. Without a beard, no man ever walked around without a beard, and no woman ever without hair. They would have been bald. In fact, they would have looked like a newborn baby with no hair at all, signifying the fact that they had been cleansed. Secondly, on the eighth day, the person was also required to bring sacrifices. Two male unblemished lambs and also a female lamb to sacrifice with grain and oil to the priest at the entrance of the tabernacle. All these sacrifices, apart from the peace offering, had to be presented before the Lord. Notably, we are told through the sacrifices that the lamb's blood was placed on the extremities of the person who had been cleaned, on the right ear, on the right thumb, and the right toe. And the oil was poured into the priest's hand and then sprinkled on the person to anoint the person and to make atonement for the person who had been healed. Now, I mentioned at the start of the message that these laws regarding leprosy illustrate to us the defiling nature of sin. Sin lies at the heart of everything that is unclean and causes separation from God. Cleansing by sacrifice is required for restoration into the presence of God. In Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 1, we are told that the law is a shadow of the good things to come, and not the good things themselves. And according to Galatians 3 verse 24, the law was a guardian until Christ came, so that we might be justified by faith. These verses are telling us that a passage like Leviticus chapter 13 and 14 is pointing to and awaiting the coming of the Messiah Jesus Christ. How so? First, at least on two occasions, we find Jesus healing lepers. On one such occasion, and we see that in Luke chapter 5, verses 12 to 15, we read the following. While he, Jesus, was in one of the cities, there came a man full of leprosy. And when he saw Jesus, he fell on his face and he begged him, "Lord, if you will, you can make me clean." And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, "I will, be clean." And immediately his leprosy left him. And he charged him to tell no one, but to go and show himself to the priest, to make an offering for cleansing, as Moses commanded. So what the law could not do, Jesus clearly was able to do. The priest could not heal the leper, but Jesus healed the leper. The only thing that the priest could do was diagnose the disease. But Jesus, the high priest, actually healed the leper. In fact, when the man came to Jesus, Jesus even touched him. Far from being affected by the disease, Jesus made the person clean. The opposite to what would have happened to anybody else who touched a leper. And the leper was healed instantaneously. Jesus even upheld the law by telling the leper to go to the priest and to bring the sacrifices that Moses had commanded. And what this would have done is, as the leper went to the priest had no choice but to bring the sacrifices on behalf of the leper, acknowledging that Jesus had the power to cleanse, to heal, and to bring cleansing to a leper. So the priests, who often opposed Jesus, had a witness of what Jesus had done. Secondly, Jesus introduced something new, which the law had never given, bringing an end to Old Testament ceremonial laws. The cleansing regulations pointed to Jesus' death. Jesus, who is actually able to remove sin. And the cleansing ritual that the priest did, first, he went outside of the camp. So also Jesus, our high priest, we are told in the Bible, went outside the camp in Jerusalem when he was crucified in order to bring his own blood so that he could cleanse those who are defiled. The symbolism of the two birds. The one bird was sacrificed and the other bird was allowed to go free. In a similar way, Jesus, in his sacrificial death, obtained cleansing from sin and life to all his people. In closing, just like the priests were experts in diagnosing leprosy, so also Jesus, our high priest, is best placed to evaluate our condition of sin and diagnose what is going on in our hearts. So let us not trust in our own understanding. Let us not go to the experts in our society. Let us ask Jesus, our physician, the physician of our souls, to tell us what is going on in our hearts and in our lives. Sin is serious. The image of the leper is quite suggestive that sin is a serious matter and that we should carefully think about sin in our own lives. The leper was declared to be unclean. He had to tear his clothes, untidy his hair, dry clean, unclean, unclean. Was forbidden to come into the Israelite camp, and there was no way that he could ever come close to the tabernacle into the presence of God except if the leper was healed and cleansed, the reality is that we can never come into the presence of God unless our sins are completely covered and unless we are forgiven. Just as leprosy spreads from one part of the body, so also sin spreads throughout our bodies and contaminates our whole being. Does it grieve us, therefore, to think about our own sin? Well, it should. And does it delight us to know that we can receive complete cleansing and restoration and come into God's presence through the Lord Jesus Christ, our High Priest? Well, it should. These truths certainly delighted a man by the name of Daniel, a leper. I've told this story before, and let me tell it again. This man, Bob, tells the story of Daniel the leper. They were in India to go and support the Gospel League in India, and on one day, Bob tells the story that they met with 50 lepers. One of them was Daniel. Daniel had an unforgettable face. Half of his nose had been eroded due to leprosy. Bob says, as we spoke to them, I asked the question. We understand that in India it is believed that those who are leprous are under the curse of a god. So how does it feel to have Jesus bearing your curse? After a long pause, Daniel answered, Jesus Christ is all I have. I nodded with my head, knowing that it was literally true. Daniel owned nothing. But his eyes betrayed a deep contentment and joy rarely seen. To be honest, I was stunned, and I could not ask of another question to ask. But Daniel spoke again. Jesus is all I need. 5 little words, but they spoke volumes. Bob said, Daniel looked at me patiently for me to respond, but I was speechless. Just then, Daniel began to speak again, and my eyes were riveted on him as he spoke words penetrating deep into my heart. Jesus Christ is all I want. Jesus Christ is all I have. He is all I need, and He is all I want. If you know your sin and you desire to be cleansed, Jesus is all you need. If we are cleansed, that means Jesus is what we have. And I'm sure we would be able to say, Jesus is all we want. Because through Him, we have access to all the blessings of God to His children. And that gives us reason to rejoice.